My name is Andrew Rome, and I'm today's worship leader. I'm joined by Worship Associate Mary Lou Holly. Lay-led services are a time-honored Unitarian Universalist tradition. We believe that the Sunday service is best reflected in a variety of voices and experiences.
Blessed is the fire that burns deep in the soul. It is the flame of the human spirit, touched into being by the mystery of life. It is the fire of reason, the fire of compassion, the fire of community, the fire of justice, the fire of faith. It is the fire of love burning deep in the human heart, the divine glow in every life. Being a worship associate is a marvelous thing. I would recommend it to any of you. You get to share ideas with great minds like Andrew's, and you get to preview the Sunday service while it's being constructed. It's quite inspiring, except for the part about the call to worship. That is scary. So after the initial panic subsided and I had time to ponder, what is spiritual activism? I realized that spiritual activism is in our DNA. It's in our seven principles. It occurred to me, a dyed-in-the-wool tree hugger, that the spiritual activism that I can lift up or share today is really one of yours. It's one of ours, and it's probably my favorite, Green Sanctuary. As you may know, we as a congregation are on the road to becoming a nationally accredited Green Sanctuary. This is not an empty title. We have steps to follow, a report to file, and documentation of our considerable efforts and aspirations to provide. What it really means is that we are living and expressing our activism for the earth and the environment, which fits right up there with the seventh UU principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Well, our Green Sanctuary may not be all of existence, but you think about it, but living this principle in efforts to save Mother Earth and her progeny is a pretty respectable chunk. And we are doing it. And I'm lucky to be a part of a group of enthusiasts who are bringing out and uplifting our past, present, and future activism in this form. So, this morning, we all start out with common threads of spiritual activism. Take a few seconds right now and think about what spiritual activism means to you. Images, words, experiences that you had, just take a moment to think about that and see what comes to your mind. You can hold this throughout the service and then come back and revisit it at the end after we shared many other experiences and explored spiritual activism as a congregation. Come, let us explore spiritual activism together.
Holy One, You who dwells within and among us, let us remember the blessings of purpose that we have received throughout our lives. When the fire of our soul burned brightly, those moments of clarity, when our direction felt in line with a greater purpose, when the doors of opportunity were easy to see and even easier to open, those moments of clarity when even strangers felt like family. We ask this day to have that clarity of spirit come forth into our lives. Again, with the power of a mighty wind, opening the horizons of our hearts and minds to that inner fire which burns inside us all. May we be inspired this day to sing out praise of this glorious life in a language beyond the power of speech, in a language of action, so that our lives might be a beacon of justice and love, and the world might know hope through our story, our song, our steps taken. We ask this day that our inner fire burn brightly with compassion and courage and love. For whatever number of days ahead are still ours to claim, these and the many prayers of our hearts, we pray now in the silence.
Justice, may our hearts be the burning within this life as bright as love in the distance. Only the work of justice is this light at the end of the tunnel.
The road is long and the traveling slow, but we don't have to walk this road all alone. Lord, I pray that every woman and man could be walking with a brother, holding hand in hand. Or maybe walking with a sister, holding hand in hand.
May our living be the light of justice. May our hearts be the burning within this life as bright as love in the distance. Only the work of justice is this light at the end of the tunnel.
We are one in the work and the love, and we walk on till the work is done, and we make change as the road moves on, and the people sing a joyful song. Everybody on your way, sing a joyful song.
May our living be the light of justice. May our hearts be the burning within this life as bright as love in the distance. Only the work of justice is this light at the end of the tunnel. Live and be the light of justice. May our live and be the light of goodness. May our live and be the light at the end of the tunnel.
That sometimes gets the better of me, but that's more often outweighed by spiritually positive effects. I've always been individualistic to a fault. Thoreau is a childhood hero. And the radical nuns at my Catholic high school were a huge influence. They were anti-war activists and nuclear activists, anti-nuclear activists, and were working in El Salvador. And the first activism that I remember being involved with was at high school. The high school was hosting an army recruiter, and one other guy and I set up a counter-recruitment table and passed out flowers and dissuaded people from going to see the recruiter. I was always deeply aware growing up of May 4th growing up here, and I've been a part of a lot of major demonstrations, New York and D.C. anti-war demonstrations and local vigils and demonstrations. And I've gotten to work for jobs as a team leader for America Coming Together and for ACORN. I've volunteered on a lot of local campaigns, national campaigns, statewide campaigns for initiatives and progressive candidates. And I remember somebody really important to me who I've known my whole life, who'd never been politically active, helping me plant yard signs for one of Betty Sutton's campaigns for the House. And that kind of thing is huge when you can get somebody else involved who otherwise wouldn't be. this year put together a volunteer tutoring program with volunteers from the church here at the Skills Community Center in Ravenna, helping pretty disadvantaged kids with their homework. I've done lots of voter registration work, and that's a really rewarding thing. I've gotten a lot of kids registered to vote for the first time. I've gotten people with felonies who think that they're not allowed to vote, registered to vote. Our local effort this past year for a community bill of rights in Kent, the result of that really accentuated the need to me for structural change, for deconcentration of power. And I think that boycotts and disinvestment, as well as demanding legislative change, are very much needed. But marches and demonstrations are hugely important, too. And they're often events with powerful emotional, spiritual charge. Being among spirited, kindred spirits in the streets, each face shining awareness and purpose and anger, can't help but be affirming and empowering. But then it feels less so when it becomes clear that we're shouting not just at power, but at the vast majority who say nothing to power, which is what power likes best. Then there can be an inclination to be avoided, best case, to feel scornful of those who silently allow injustice to continue and deepen. I can feel a degree of contempt for people who are oblivious, and more so for people who know what's up but do nothing, and still more for myself when I'm not able and sometimes not willing to do more. All that can lead to a pretty negative spiritual place. But being aware of that danger and recognizing its onset can do a lot toward making it, toward keeping it from getting too dark. And ideally, and I find that it's usually the case, the greater awareness and experience of cooperation gained in working for justice on its own outweighs the negative flip side, especially when a particularly effective, strong stand is taken, or especially when there's a victory. But standing up for what's right always does good. You can't help, if it's in public, you can't help but raise some awareness. My interest in human rights issues ranges wide, but I celebrate the civil rights movement. And most of what captivates my attention in the news and in books and in the street and in the public square are matters of race. My awe of the movement just gets deeper as I read more and more and commemorate major events from 50 years ago. I got to go to D.C. with the NAACP the summer before last for the commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, and went to Mississippi last summer visiting civil rights sites, honoring people and places of that Freedom Summer. And I hope to go to Selma this March for the commemoration of those marches. And I anticipate with excitement the emerging next phase of the fight for racial justice. In the last few weeks, I've gotten to attend a rally at Al Sharpton's House of Justice in Harlem, heard Eric Garner's sister speak, and was part of one of the days of demonstrations in Cleveland, one that had people from Ferguson. I met Tamir Rice's brother, heard Tanisha Anderson's sister speak, and we lay in the street at Playhouse Square. I get the struggle to a degree because, on a personal level, because I'm poor. I recognize, though, that I'm able to be poor and not suffer many of the effects of being poor that people of color with the same income suffer. And I suffer other effects to a lesser extent, far lesser. But I get a taste of it. And by commuting on bicycle, I get a taste of what unreasoning hostility feels like, hostility on sight. When I get it from motorists on the road, that must be, in a minor way, a similar feeling to being a young black man categorically and unreasonably, hatefully really, deemed suspicious or otherwise not worthy of respect. And it adds up, the effect of slights and hostilities that may be minor, each one alone, but have a cumulative effect. The obstacles I face as a white man with just a misdemeanor record give me a taste of what people must face, people of color, who are so disproportionately and unreasonably, disproportionately at every stage of the process, targeted, stopped, arrested, not to mention beaten or killed, charged, convicted of felonies for things that shouldn't even be felonies, disparately sentenced, saddled with permanent obstacles to real citizenship. I think that only the most jaded and really naive person would really believe that her voice can have no impact whatsoever, or that hers can't be a potentially crucial part of reaching a critical mass. Speaking of critical mass, that's the name of a bicyclist activist group I've been on several urban rides with. And I think that's one of the most spiritually fulfilling aspects of activism, although there's a slippery slope towards smugness. But when you can visibly demonstrate your values, and I know that feeling from being car-free, commuting by bicycle, demonstrating that it's doable, and making at least some people stop and think how it would be if just 5%, say, did the same thing. If every 20th car were a bicycle instead, wow, we've got a better world already. But it just takes a few of the many. How many is enough becomes apparent only after there's a victory for justice. It's never enough until it is.
We have a long and crippling legacy of believing in the power of external realities much more deeply than we believe in the power of the inner life. How many times have you heard or said, "Those are inspiring notions, but the hard reality is"? But the great insight of our spiritual traditions is that we, especially those of us who enjoy political freedom and relative affluence, are not victims of that society. We are its co-creators. We live in and through a complex interaction of spirit and matter, of the powers inside of us and the stuff out there in the world. External reality does not impinge upon us as an ultimate constraint. If we who are privileged find ourselves confined, it is only because we have conspired in our own imprisonment. The spiritual traditions do not deny the reality of the outer world. They simply claim that we help make that world by projecting our spirit on it, for better or for worse. If our institutions are rigid, it is because our hearts fear change. If they set us in mindless competition with each other, it is because we value victory over all else. If they are heedless of human well-being, it is because something in us is heartless as well. We can make choices about what we are going to project, and with those choices, we help grow the world that is. Consciousness precedes being. Consciousness, yours and mine, can form, deform, and reform our world. Our complicity in world-making is a source of awesome and sometimes painful responsibility, and a source of profound hope for change. It is the ground of our common call to leadership, the turn that makes leaders of us all.
I have to admit I've struggled a bit to decide what it is that I want to share with you about activism in my life. I often feel a bit like a sellout as I work for a large corporation now, complete with great benefits and a 401k. I am not on the front lines fighting for justice. In fact, I spend a fair amount of time in the middle of the night thinking of all of the problems in the world and all of the things that I am not doing to help every day. I realized a few years ago that I needed to find a way to make the work I do every day align better with my values as a UU, and I set out to find a way to do that. I think I've always been an activist at heart. I was raised in an environment of activism. My parents both protested during the civil rights movements in the 60s, and I grew up in Cleveland Heights, where social justice was taught as a part of the curriculum in school. I can remember being about age 8 and having my older sister, who was then 18, teach me to give the finger to anti-abortion protesters that we passed on the road. We have different methods, but she's an activist too. I also grew up in the theater scene in Cleveland, which is where I learned how art can be used to affect social change. My very first play was Pinocchio at Heights Youth Theater when I was 5. I was a sea creature. The play was directed by Michael Labasi, a man I grew to love and respect very much over the course of the years that I worked with him. He became sick when I was 11 and died of AIDS a few years later. I remember feeling gutted seeing him the last time before he died, so gaunt and weak and so different from the dynamic and vibrantly alive man that I had known. He was the first friend I lost to AIDS, but he would not be the last. Awareness of injustice awakened within me during this time. I saw that AIDS was not being given the attention that it needed. I saw my friends dying without their families who had disowned them. I opened my eyes to what was happening in the world and my country, and I was outraged. I've always considered social justice to be an important part of my life, but I've struggled with the fact that I didn't feel like the work that I'm doing now as a corporate trainer was making a positive difference or enough of a positive difference. Last year, I decided to go back to school to learn more about systemic and organizational injustice. On the first day, one of my professors, Dr. Tim Ewing, introduced himself as a tempered radical. The words reverberated in my head, and I understood that this could maybe describe what I wanted to do, what I want to be. He said that he understood we all want to change the world for the better, and I found him looking at me, and he called me out as a radical. And in the corporate world, sometimes I feel like I'm going to get found out as the radical leftist that I actually am, like hiding in sheep's clothing, but I am hiding in there. And his concept of tempered radicalism is the idea that you can be within that system and create change from within that system. And so I find it to be similar to the concept of spiritual activism in the sense that it's a part of you and a part of what you do every day and how you live and interact with the world, whether it's like setting Joel straight on Facebook or, you know. No, but staying in the conversation and staying honest within that conversation and trying to bring your own truth and your own reality to light, I think there is something to just those everyday moments as well. Let's see, I got excited there. There is a book titled Tempered Radicalism in case anybody's interested out there. So what I do now in my work is I recruit entry-level IT professionals, which doesn't sound that exciting, but there's a focus on finding a more diverse pool of candidates. So I try to find people from all walks of life and different backgrounds and bring them into the company that I work for. This is the daily grind that I'm doing now. I feel like this work is helping to change the makeup of the workforce at my company, which can have a trickle-down effect, can have an effect later on. And so I have to reconnect with that mission in the work that I'm doing every day, because some of the time all I'm doing is like fighting with a pivot table, you know, like fighting with the data. And I have to remember that that is also connected to my overall mission in trying to make the world better. I have to continually reconnect with that mission to keep myself sane. I've also led GLBT groups for my company, which has helped to change the policy both internally and externally to be more inclusive. We now have the language updated in all of our HR policies to include LGBT people, and we also have campaigned to have our health insurance cover medical costs for transgendered employees. So we're trying to make a difference in these small ways within our company. I hope that our entire company can lead as an example that way, and I like to be a part of that. And what I really wanted to share with you is this concept of tempered radicalism. It reminds me of sermons that Melissa, where she's talked about blooming where you're planted. You know, we can't all be, radicals in the street. We can't all be protesting that way, although that's really necessary and important, too. But we can all move the needle a little bit forward in the worlds that we're living in every day. I may not be working to directly end poverty or end racial injustice, but I can hope that by creating a more inclusive environment within my workplace, I can make a small change that will make room for greater changes as well. If we all do our part to change our own corners of the world, imagine what we can all do collectively.
Well, I found that I'm kind of a deadline person, and I think I'm bringing it up to the wire this time, because as I look at the time, I see I need to edit again. I have so much to say about activism that I would keep us here for much longer than our service time. So we're editing on the fly, and I'm going to give you just the very best bits. And if I go over a few minutes, I do apologize. I wanted to explore the hope that activism can lead us to a better world. I wanted to find out what enables action that does make a difference. I want to learn from people who find places where their passions and opportunities align with the world's infinite needs. And even more amazing to me are the people who then find fulfilling ways to work at that intersection. I believe activist work requires faith that more will come after us to carry our work even further, fulfilling the promises that we made long after our involvement has ended. My hope is to continue to make our church a supportive, nurturing community for all people to act on their values. Lyra Keith wrote, "The task of an activist is not to negotiate systems of power with as much personal integrity as possible. It's to dismantle those systems." I love this definition for how it prioritizes social change over our innate desire to be good by conforming to social expectations. Personally, I think of activism as working intentionally to bring the world into greater alignment with your values. I think that means activism is driven by values, action-focused, and primarily external, not internal. Internal, self-focused work like education, reflection, experiences will guide activism, but must serve as a starting point, not a goal. Activism must be intentional, mindful of goals or processes, and reflective about efficacy. There is no accidental activist. And we're going to skip. My commitment to activism grows and wanes and changes form. I believe in taking the next steps in front of me with as much integrity as I can muster, and with as much creativity as possible in forging new ways forward. I volunteered for 2 years of national service through AmeriCorps, and this experience was wonderful. The teams I worked on helped me figure out where my values fit in the world. But that experience ended with my term of service, and I moved here, working at a university coordinating a federal healthcare grant. Also not quite satisfying, and I left that position to be a full-time stay-at-home foster parent for Summit County. Foster parenting allowed me to give my whole life over to caring for children who needed a home, and to get not only a connection to others, but to become parts of the same family. I like to think that my commitment to activism has changed from the temporary terms of service to the constant work of daily life, and has changed from traveling across the country to work within my own home. For a time, I was driven by commitment to ideas rather than focused on people. Now I need a community to be an activist. When I was driven by ideas, I found that my primary motivator was outrage. Outrage at the many ways our world fails with injustice, carelessness, misplaced, uninformed intentions. Outrage was easy for me, but exhausting. However, when I'm part of a community, listening compassionately, working in solidarity, I am more motivated by love. Instead of being outraged by the many children abused, neglected, or hungry, I love my children, and I find joy in making a better world for them. Instead of being outraged at rampant environmental destruction, I love transcendent experiences of nature and seek ways to preserve and share them. While righteous anger at injustice is, for many, a path into activism, love can help that activist work to continue. Community is not only sustaining, but formative and guiding as well. I found in my years working in AmeriCorps that building relationships with the people around you and listening well enough to them inspires activism. Forming relationships which have space to care deeply about the values of others, even when they are different, help me to clarify my own values and see them as worthy to act upon. I know it can be difficult to share our values out of fear that we might be challenged or out of respect for other people's beliefs. We might fear someone will say, "How can you care about this if you aren't doing something about it, or if you aren't doing enough about it?" But overcoming our fear and sharing our values helps us to move forward on them. Then we can say, "I'm going to do this because I said I would." I've also learned to listen to my community when I stray from my values or pursue them a bit too far. This is a hard lesson for me. I grew up steeped in Catholic social teaching and centered on justice and self-sacrifice. And in the face of so much need for change and so much uncertainty about what to do, there is a powerful lure to doing something, one meaningful thing, despite any personal cost. But it turns out that commitment and self-destructive behavior are different. When the people I trust and love all tell me that my intentions are good, but my plans are not, I need to have the humility to listen. The love and compassion I extend to others must also include caring for myself. I'm still uncomfortable using the word activist to describe myself. I think of it as aspirational, hoping to become more like the people who inspire me. I'm still searching for ways to bring the world into greater alignment with my values, to promote justice, equity, and compassion. I'm sustained by the opportunities within this church, by all that I love, and by my faith that I'm not alone. At the beginning of this new year, I invite you to look for the community to support your activism and how you can be part of that community for others. Share your values. Listen for what drives the heart of people around you. Widen your circle and have faith that the connections you make will help fire the commitment of us all.
I will stand with you. Will you stand with me? We will be the change that we hope to see. In the name of love, in the name of peace, will you stand with me?
So this is a simple chorus that we can all learn in the next minute. It goes, I will stand
with you. Will you stand with me? We will be the change that we hope to see. In the name of love, in the name of peace, will you stand, will you stand with me?
One more time.
I will stand with you. Will you stand with me? We will be the change that we hope to see. In the name of love, in the name of peace, will you stand, will you stand with me?
I'll leave you today with these words from John C. Morgan. Let us bless and keep one another. Let kindness rule in our hearts and compassion in our lives until we meet again. Amen.